You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff editor at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Welcome into another weekend edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Going on 3 weeks in a row of this now. Probably going to become a tradition, I think, for the new year. So look forward to that. On today's episode, I will break down the Pacers' 125-88 win over the Pistons. Sorry, that was my computer if you caught that on the mic. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Pacers standing in the East, what it means, and kind of maybe pour some cold water on, are the Pacers really a legit contender? So that might be depressing for you guys out there, but I've been told we have a reverse jinx in this podcast, so hopefully it'll be a reverse jinx. We'll see what happens, though. So let's get right to it. The Indiana Pacers win their 24th game of the regular season. They're currently 24-12. They defeat the Pistons 125-88, just completely dominating the entire game, basically. They scored 32 points in the first quarter, go up by 11, and then kind of just kept maintaining that lead of somewhere between probably 11 and 15 for most of the game until about the third quarter, or late third quarter, where they finished about 20, and they kind of just added on at the end of the game. The Pistons were sort of, I think, mailing it in by the fourth quarter. It was an overall impressive game for pretty much every player on this roster that got minutes, like significant minutes, not some of the 3-, 4-, 5-minute guys that actually kind of play at the end of the game. But what was most surprising, I think, from the game to start was Victor Oladipo. So of the 9 rotation guys, Victor Oladipo was the only one not to score double figures. I think if we had a bet of, we just have a streak of like guys who, 9 guys scoring double figure points, whatever it is. I think if we had a bet on it right now, if Victor Oladipo was the one of those 9 guys not to score 10 points, those would be very, very like high odds. Like you would just like you would need a huge cash up to bet that. Like it would be 100-1, 200-1 that Victor Oladipo would be the one guy not to score 10 points out of all the 9 rotation guys. I don't think he played very well. In terms of at least offensively scoring, he was still distributing the ball around, kind of doing things like he has started to adjust to. Tony has a really good quote on his Twitter feed that when he talked to McMillan after the game, when he asked him about it, McMillan kind of said, well, Vic's getting the double teams, he's trapped, and he has to start recognizing he's got to get the ball out and let other guys kind of get to where they need to be, get the ball to them, and get them opportunities to kind of score. And it's kind of boosting his assist total because he's slowly starting to recognize that. What Vic needs to do better still, I think, I mean, it's not McMillan's words anymore, is he's got to learn in the spots where he can kind of exploit. Like, I understand team are double teaming a ton, but he's kind of settling sometimes for really bad long shots. I think he's better off actually just going like 2 of 5 and letting, you know, other guys get better looks or more efficient shots, let's say that. And then eventually, I think, as everybody else continues to kind of put up these huge numbers, like as Turner continues to be on this run of, you know, I mean, now it's not 17 points every night, but it seems like every other night it's 17 or more points. You know, you got Turner's bonus every night. It seems like they're in the 15 to 19 range, I guess is the right way to put it. As those guys continue to do that, teams will eventually have to adjust back to stopping them. Otherwise, they'll continue to lose to the Pacers, who are basically have been dominating. I mean, they've been dominating pretty bad teams, and they beat the Bucks and Sixers, but you know, the Sixers were down Jimmy Butler, but they are dominating teams. The team will have to adjust to that, or they won't adjust, and the Pacers just keep winning, and they'll end up winning, you know, 50-something games this year. Like, they're almost, I mean, they're on pace, I think, for somewhere in the low 50s. Other guys tonight, Collison had probably his best game of the season. Some fan out there pointed out that we were talking about how bad Collison was. He's out the door at the end of the year. Now he had the best game of the season. I don't know if this is probably an anomaly to his overall, which I think has not been a great year. His three-point percentage is up over the last few games. I'm going to pull it up real quick on B-Ball Ref. But tonight, he just, I don't know, everything went in. So, I mean, you know, Collison is still an efficient shooter like that. You know, he never is going to take 20 shots, 15 shots even. It's always going to be somewhere 7 to 10 if he's going to have a good night. You know, a lot of times it's like he'll take 6, which is fine. He understands his role in his offense. But, you know, for a while, what was hurting him is his three-point percentage was just not good. So in the month of December, his three-point percentage is 44.2%. Before then, if I had a guess, I mean, I'll look it up real fast, but I guarantee it was nowhere close to that. It was probably in the low 30s, if worse. It was 30% on the dot, so I nailed that. Nice prediction by Adam right on that one, I know. Self-brag. So that's where he's obviously become the player he was more like last year, which was the super efficient Collison who was shooting 46% from three. Like, I never thought this season he would be able to get to that mark again. I mean, that was just an incredible feat he accomplished last year. But if he could be above 40% all year, which he's getting there, 37% now, if he could be above 40%, he becomes a really efficient offensive player. He doesn't turn over the ball a ton. You know, last year he led the league in assist to turnover ratio. This year, I don't know he's that high, but he still has, you know, his assist to turnover ratio is like it's closer to four. It's 5.6 assists to 1.5 turnovers. So it's not quite a four number, but it's close to it. And that's really good. And if he can just become, again, the efficient Collison who's shooting almost 50, 40, 90, which last year it was 49.5, 46.8, and 88.2. This year it's 44.7, 37, and 76. If you can get to maybe not even 50, 40, 90, but let's say like 47, 40, 80. I mean, that's probably enough with, you know, the 1.5 to close to one turnovers per game. You get that down a little bit. I mean, that makes him such an efficient offensive player that even if he's not like your go-to scorer or your need-to guy, he's out there and draws attention of the defense because when you need to rely on him, he can kind of come up clutch for you guys. I mean, he's proven that before in the past where, you know, he is basically their number two clutch guy, I think. You know, when the Pacers, when Vic was hurt, they needed a guy to get a big shot in the Suns game. They go to him. When Vic is getting double-team, triple-team, they go to Collison for the big shot. Like, and that's the player Collison can be, which is sort of a steadying hand of efficiency. And then when you really need him at any moment, he can kind of be the isolated play offensive guy. That's what he can be. And so it's good to see him having a good game. We'll see if we can put together a couple of those. I know he's had a decent run of late, but this was probably his obviously best game of the season. He's now had three game double digit points, so that's in a row. That's a good little run. We'll see if we keep adding that. And this is kind of how this Pacer team keeps spiraling into more and more wins is, you know, they had the explosion of Turner for probably the start of December, and then he sort of leveled off. You know, he's still having great stats, but he's just kind of leveled off. Then you have the explosion of Young, that next stretch that helped carry them to more wins. And then you have another explosion of Collison as guys kind of regress back to more of their mean, because I don't think Thaddeus Young, I think he was like a 17-point-a-game guy over this month of December. I don't think that's what he normally is. I think he's more like a 12 to 15-point-a-game guy, which is still really good. But, you know, you can ride that way. You know, they rove the Bogdanovich and Oladipo trade, Sabonis and Oladipo trade for the first 20, 30 games. I mean, that's just kind of what you have to do is you have to, or maybe 20 games is the right way to put it. You have to keep riding hot waves, and as one guy goes off, another guy picks up his play, and it helps kind of keep the team winning and keeps them spiraling forward. And then you get the occasional game where everybody's hot, everybody's playing well, and all of a sudden you can beat a team by 37 points like tonight. I mean, that's how you get to tonight. Thad Young had another good game. I've talked enough about him over the past week. I mean, I keep praising him all year. Only once 8 of 13 for 17 points. I mean, he has just found a way to get more shots through tip-ins, through the pick and roll, through little backdoor cuts. I mean, he's just finding ways to get more shots and more efficient shots. And he's not worried about stretching the floor as much because he'll go to the 3-point line, but he'll use that great skill he has for anticipation and for kind of reading the D as the defense kind of ignores him in the corner to make a straight cut to the rim and either get the tip in or get a pass for a nice little dunk. Like, he does little things that, even though he's not the perfect guy to stretch the floor, when defenses collapse, he gets the spots on the floor where he can get the ball and score, which is kind of a somewhat counter to the fact that he's this like high efficient 3-point shooter. And then the other two guys I talked about at the top of the show, but Sabonis and Turner, both had great games. I thought, I know Turner only had two rebounds, but Turner, when he's an efficient shooter combined with his defense, he becomes at all times one of the best players on the court, because he can, you know, protect the rim at probably one of the best rates in the NBA this season. It's good stuff. Look it up at some point, what his, you know, rim protection numbers are, if there's any good stats to kind of show, you know, where Gobert was last year compared to this year and why he won Defensive Player of the Year. But he's so good on the defensive end in terms of protecting the rim and being able to kind of be the one big guy who can switch on the smaller guys and still hold his own. And then when he can be an efficient offensive player without even the rebounding, he's really good. And then Sabonis continues to be 19 and 10 every night. I mean, he was 19 and 12 tonight, but he continues to be just that. You know, he has the maybe occasional bad game, but continues to be just a high efficient scorer who can just grab rebound after rebound after rebound after rebound. I mean, it's kind of why him and Turner together make the best player, but they're both becoming so good on their own efficiently while shooting, especially the way Turner's been playing, that it's what's kind of carrying this team, because you got Sabonis able to lead kind of this this old school bench unit, and you got Turner's able to lead kind of this new school starting unit. And then when you need it at times, you can pick parts from each of those lineups to create a really good lineup if you need a certain situation. You know, like they'll play a lot of Joseph and Smoke in the games, and they'll pick apart, you know, mash those lineups together to get like this sometimes perfect, depending on the matchup situation, where they can win a game. You know, that's the great part about Turner's Bones, is each is usable in different situations, and they're starting to, in a way, complement each other in the sense that, like, that they don't, there's no drop off in some kind of the play. Like, you know, there's a little bit drop defensively, but Sabonis is better offensively enough that it makes up the difference. And then the same thing with Sabonis' offense drops to Turner's offense. He's so good defensively that it picks it up. So in terms of like net rating on the court, it feels like there's not as much of a drop as there kind of was at the beginning of the year when Turner was struggling. So that's really good. This game, you know, I don't know if you can read much into it in terms of what it means for the Pacers. The Pacers are not a very good team. They're 16-17 now. They're kind of in that middling class in the East, where there's the top five teams, and then there's kind of this 6-10 number where the Pistons hang, and the Pacers, you know, there's just a huge divide between basically the top five and the rest of the East. I mean, that even that middling range is only where they are because they beat up on the bottom five in the East. So there's classes in the East, and the top class where the Pacers are right now is just so much better than the rest of the East that it doesn't matter. And this is the game the Pacers, you think, should win and expect to win. So, I mean, you know, winning by 37 is probably a little bit of an outlier in terms of, like, they ran up the score at the end of the game because the Pistons kind of mailed it in. But this is probably a 20-point win over a team that they should be by 20 points, because the Pistons are just not that good of an NBA team. They played too old school. They got too kind of, I guess Griffin isn't really a traditional big, but they play a traditional big lineup. They don't really have a great point guard anymore. Jackson's not very good, I don't think. So this is a game they should win. So I don't know if you can read into this too much. The Pacers are a dominant team in the East, you know. We'll know more about the Pacers as they play those other four teams in the top five category in the East. And that's what I want to talk about next. So let's take a quick pause, and I want to talk about the Pacers' position in the East and why it might not be as strong right now, but how they can kind of dispel or get rid of any doubt. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. This is going to be a pretty quick segment, probably 5-7 minutes tops. Right now, where the Pacers sit, they're 24-12. If I did the math right in my head real quick, they're on pace for like 53 wins, give or take. Maybe 52 is the right number. But they're on pace for I think it's 53. 53, 54 is the right number. But they're on pace for a better year than last year. They're really just dominating they're just dominating the conference right now. I mean, they're 18-5 in the conference. I mean, I know they've lost. So they've lost five games in the conference. So if I do it off the top of my head, they're five losses, one to Toronto, one to Milwaukee, one to Philadelphia, one to Cleveland, and one to Charlotte. Those are their five conference losses. They are dominating the division, obviously. They've lost two division games the whole year, one to Cleveland and one to Milwaukee. But they said game and a half back of first place in the East. They've kind of separated a little bit from Boston, who has, you know, they've been 6-4 in the last 10 pitchers, 8-2. Pitchers won four in a row. They've won, I mean, a ton of their last, they won seven or then lost two and then have won four more since. So what's that, 11 of the last 13? You know, they're definitely in the thick of it for a top three seed. Let's put it that way. Like they have a shot, and they're going to have a shot because they do a great job of beating the teams they should. But I just don't know, you know, I think a top three seed is the seed you have to covet if you're the Pacers, because if not, you're probably on a first round exit. I know that's really maybe frustrating and annoying to say. And, you know, Pacer fans can scream at me, and you might be right. I mean, I could be proved wrong in the playoffs for sure. But you look at Boston, Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee, each of those teams has two legitimate guys. Toronto, you make the case, maybe Lowry isn't there anymore, but I think he still is. And then you can throw in Siakam, who's kind of making this leap. The Bucks have Middleton and Giannis, plus Bledsoe, who's probably like a tier B guy. Philadelphia's obviously got those three guys. Maybe Simmons is a tier B right now, but he could be a tier one if he can get his offensive numbers up. Himself have, I mean, when they're really healthy, if Horford is actually going to be healthy eventually, I mean, they got Hayward, Horford, Kyrie, Tatum, and that's four guys who might be in the A class of guys. So you don't want to be in that 4-5 matchup, which is going to be hard because it's going to be competitive. They're going to have to beat some of these top teams in the East. They're going to have to beat Philadelphia when they play them again. They're going to have to beat Toronto when they play them on Sunday. They're going to have to beat, that's the following Sunday, not this Sunday. They're going to have to beat the Bucks. They're going to have, you know, they're going to have to win some of these games, which they have, so not saying they can't. But the thing about the Pacers is, are they better built for the regular season than for the postseason in terms of they still haven't found out the solution to double-teaming Vic? And you can see that in these games where Vic is struggling, where they still haven't figured. I mean, I think the solution is Vic to kind of become the better passer and rely on other guys, but will those other guys step up in the playoffs? And that's the kind of thing you don't know until you see it. Now, there's a case, too. The Pacers will have a number two guy where Turner or Sabonis is somewhere as a number two guy, one of those guys, and if they're not, you know, B, they're high-level C guys who are on the cusp of becoming B-level players as number two options on teams. Or the Pacers have, and the Pacers have a ton of players who I say are on the C-level. I mean, I would say everybody from Thad, Sabonis, Turner, Collison had a struggling year. Thad, Turner, Sabonis, Kojo are probably all C-level guys, and maybe you could put Collison in there, and then McDermott's probably one little notch below that, and Tyreek as well. Where, you know, besides Toronto, I don't think any of these other East teams are extremely deep. I mean, Philly traded their depth to get Butler, but you do that. Boston is probably the other one who is as deep, where they go seven or eight men, but they're not completely healthy right now. You got Horford hurt, and Rozier's not playing great. And then Toronto, obviously, is like nine guys deep. So, you know, maybe the matchup is you draw Philly, and maybe you get Philly in the first round at the 4-5 and able to beat them somehow. But I think you have to aim for one of those top three seeds because, like I said, after the five, the East is garbage. I mean, they can beat Charlotte, Miami, Detroit, Brooklyn, Orlando, Washington. Any of those teams make the playoffs as a 6-8 seed. They can beat any of those teams probably in five games. I mean, and then you get some momentum. You're rolling into a second-round series maybe against Milwaukee or Toronto and maybe get lucky. I mean, you know, the longer you're in the playoffs, maybe somebody gets hurt. I know that's, you know, bad to wish for, but the way the playoffs are, injuries can really dictate how a lot of series go and how a lot of the playoff outcomes are decided. So maybe you roll into a round two series against Toronto, but Kawhi's hurt, or not even Kawhi, maybe Kyle Lowry's hurt, or you rolling against the Bucks and Middleton's hurt, and things like that, where the B-level guy's hurt, and you've got the deeper team, whatever it is, and so that's what you have to kind of hope for. But, you know, you can make the case, and we'll see how the season goes, but that's, you know, Turner, Sabonis, one of them, or both of them will elevate to a B-level, and that's why this team has a shot. The problem is that you don't know whether they'll elevate themselves until the playoffs. You know, Turner could have a 20-10 season, and that would be great, and he'd be an all-star, but to know if he is really a true number two star, you have to do that in the playoffs. You know, Oladipo, I think, proved that last year in the series where he played really good for five of the seven games of that series, and he was dragging them to competitive games in game five, and really in game four, he did some of that too. Turner was really kind of awful last year in the playoffs. Bonus is pretty good, so maybe that's kind of the option, but so that's how you're going to have to learn, and that's why you want to get a top three seed, because then you get to play a bad team in the first round, beat them, build that playoff momentum, build that experience, and then you use that experience to hopefully kind of boost your team, boost your players' confidence so they can win a round two series. Because I think on paper, because they're so deep, because Pacers are actually well-coached, and you have to give McMillan credit, they are very well-coached in terms of their very good at executing in chaos situations, end of game play. They're very good defensively. Like that's a huge cut to all coaching their defense. A lot of it is coaching and being able to put the guys in the right spots. I mean, they have the talent too, but a lot of it is coaching a really good scheme to, you know, attack guys and run guys off 3-point lines and not give up space. And they do a really good job of that. Like when they rush out to 3-point shooters, they do a really good job of not just running the guy off the 3-point line to a long two, but kind of closing out and forcing him to kind of hold the ball, make a pass, and slow the offense down. They do a good job of that at times. And that's just one piece of their, obviously, league-best defense, which we can talk about another time, is still incredible and really could be the one that can carry them. And so, you know, they probably can execute that defense in the playoffs, but the question is, can they have enough offensive production? And that's why they haven't solved the Vic double team and what to do yet. And I think the solution really is Vic just to pass out and hope somebody else can do it. But I don't know. We haven't seen it yet. Can somebody else really step up, you know, in the playoffs? You know, we've seen Collison now do it at the end of the game. We saw Bojan do it at the end of the game. At one point, you know, he missed that three or long two against the Kings. We've seen Turner do it. Now we need to see him do it in the playoffs. And the only way to really know if you have, you know, if your guy is a number two guy in the playoffs, is for him to do it in the playoffs. So all this stuff we're talking about right now is we can debate, we can talk about it, but we won't know the true facts until the playoffs happen. So that's why I'm still advocating they need. I mean, advocating's not the right word, but I'm really hoping they're able to fight for a top three seed. I mean, this team, that should be their goal. I mean, I'm sure it is their goal, but you know, I think settling for that 4-5 game is not something they want to do or should do, because I think it's ultimately a 4-5 matchup is a first-round exit. A top three seed is a two-round playoff run, maybe longer, if they can kind of build momentum. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. You can tweet on this whole podcast, really. You can tweet at Locked On Pacers, your comments, views. I said we're going to do a mailbag podcast in the new year. We definitely will. If you want to send questions, I'll keep collecting them, but I'll keep kind of teasing it more as we get into the new year, because I want to do a mailbag podcast once, probably the first or probably the second or third week of January. I got to talk to Tony about it, but I think it's time to kind of do another mailbag or maybe a new year Pacer mailbag. We could theme it like that, but send in your questions, stuff like that, to at Locked On Pacers, at TeastNBA, or at FreedomAdam5. All three of those, we'll collect them and try to grow a list of questions, because it's time we hear from you guys again, because that's the best part of the show, is hearing from you guys. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony will be back next week with all the podcasts. I'm taking the week off, so you will not hear this lovely, kind of waspy, crackly, kind of sick voice for a whole week. But you'll get back to me on next Monday on our Withdraw Weekly show, so look forward to that. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.